Now we turn our attention to the Poor People's Campaign Truth and Poverty Bus Tour hearing held in the Bay Area of California on Saturday, April 6th. We will hear parts of the Bay Area hearing.
My name is Anthony Prince. I'm one of four co-chairpersons for the California Poor People's Campaign. We're joined today by two of my fellow co-chairs, Faye Wilson Kennedy, over here. And Kenya Alcocer, where are you, Kenya? Way in the back over there. And I also bring greetings from Reverend Eddie Anderson, who's not here with us, but he's one of our co-chair cohorts. And I believe he'll be joining us in Fresno in a couple of days as we move through the state of California on the Real Emergency Tour, Truth and Poverty Tour. The Thrive Choir there beautifully transposed the words of Dr. King into a beautiful melody. I want to point out that Dr. King once said that when we sit down to eat breakfast, everyone in the world has collaborated in putting that food on our table. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
People had to plant the seeds. People had to harvest. Someone had to make the tires and the transmission for the truck that the drivers took the food to the processing plants and into the supermarkets and then onto the tables. And someone made the plates and the forks and the knives, and someone's generating the electricity so we could see what we're doing. You know what I'm trying to say? The entire world, Dr. King says, collaborated. And nothing can be done without the collaboration of the entire world.
Man.
Nothing. So what we have determined to do, and we are not simply paying homage, we're not simply remembering Dr. King, we're picking up the baton. We're picking up the baton that was so, in such an untimely and brutal manner, cut down in 1968, the anniversary of which we just recognized just a few days ago, am I right? So we're here today in Oakland, California, and we're not memorializing, we're not simply honoring, we're not simply putting up a picture, we're not simply making quotations, we're picking up that blood-stained baton and carrying forward Dr. King's struggle. Am I right about that? You know, we talk about fusion, and the Poor People's Campaign has been from day one about fusion politics. And when we talk about fusion, we're not just talking about support, we're not just talking about alliance, we're not just talking about even intersection, because intersection, I'm going this way, you're going this way, we might meet here, but you're going your way, I'm going my way. You know what I'm saying? Well, we're talking about the word fusion is about a chemical process where we recognize the objective. As I said, Dr. King recognized the objective enmeshment, complete chemical impossibility of separating one aspect of society from the other. In the same way, you can take a hammer and you can hit a water, you will not get oxygen and hydrogen because they're fused. They cannot be broken apart. And our adversaries would like nothing better but to break apart this incipient movement that we're building here. But they're not going to succeed, are they? They're not going to succeed.
That's
I guarantee
right.
you.
That's right.
They can't succeed because history is on our side. History is on our side. I want to talk just for a moment about the campaign. As some of you know, in this last spring and summer, some of us went to jail here in Sacramento as our compatriots across the country went to jail and protested and marched and picketed and engaged in moral fusion, direct action, civil disobedience to bring attention to the poverty in this country. 140 million people at or below the poverty line. 140 million people, one step away. One step away. Did we see this government shutdown of just a few weeks ago? Did you see people who had worked their entire careers for the federal government, civil service employees, waiting in bread lines, going to the homeless shelters? That's how close. That's how close. That's how close that everyone in this country is. So when we organize the Poor People's Campaign, we're walking point for the broader interests of all of American society, because no one can be secure. No one can know for certainty that the next day they'll have the means necessary to feed their families. So when we meet here today, we're not just meeting for the sake of Oakland. We're not just meeting even for the Poor People's Campaign. We're walking point for this broad struggle to transform the society. They can build a home on an assembly line in 45 minutes while we have people sleeping in a cardboard box just a few blocks from here. So I'm going to say that what we're doing here, when we talk about these four completely interconnected social evils, systemic racism, environmental degradation, poverty, and this vicious war economy. We were just in Chico Paradise. We launched the tour just a few days ago in Chico, and we toured Paradise, where in one night, November 8th, 2018, 50,000 people were made homeless by the worst and most deadliest fire in California history. If you go to Chico today, you will see the streets filled with homeless people, many of whom didn't even want to call themselves homeless. We're not homeless, we simply got burned out of paradise. We're not homeless, we simply, you know, in a transition to something else. Just a few short weeks later today, there is no distinction between the so-called pre-disaster homeless and those who lost their homes because of the Paradise Fire. There is no distinction. And there is increasingly no distinction between those who are at the lip, the edge of poverty, and those who have already fallen through. And I don't like this concept of the safety net, because the safety net says, the safety net assumes that we're walking a perilous tightrope all the time.
Right.
We're tired of walking a perilous tightrope all the time and depending on a safety net. We don't need to walk a perilous tightrope all the time when the state of California grows more food in the Central Valley, in the Imperial Valley. Mm-hmm. Necessary, all that's required to feed the entire United States of America. I go to Salinas all the time. I'm general counsel for the Salinas Homeless Union and a few other homeless unions. And you have people that have worked their whole lives to harvest half the lettuce, half the romaine and iceberg lettuce in this country is produced right in that valley. And you have people that can't afford to eat and purchase the very things that they're growing every single day. And they're being poisoned by the pesticide. And they're being systemically discriminated against based on race and based on class, based on their status as farm workers and poor people and people dependent on public aid and have been injured to the point where they're now homeless when they built the homes in the city of Salinas. You know what I'm trying to say? There's something wrong with this picture. There's something wrong.
Buenas tardes. Good afternoon. Bienvenidas y bienvenidos. In my tradition from southern Chile, in our Mapuche tradition, before we say our own name, we honor our ancestors by invoking their names. And as I invoke the names of my grandmothers, I invite you to do the same. I am the great-granddaughter of Dominga, the granddaughter of Rosario, the daughter of Lily. My name is Maria Cristina Placidis Burgoa. I was going to begin my remarks by quoting the prophet Isaiah, but as a queer two-spirit Unitarian Universalist indigenous immigrant woman, I decided on another prophet and theologian closer to my own heart and experience, Audre Lorde. And she tells us, because she's still speaking, right? Yes. I have come to believe over and over again that what is most important to must be spoken. The thing that is most important to us must be spoken. All kinds of silences must be broken, must be made verbal and shared, even at the risk of having it bruised and misunderstood. Amen. We all hurt in so many different ways, amen? Yeah. All the time, and pain will either change or end. We are here to end the suffering. We are here to end the silence and end the pain together. Audre Lorde says, I began to recognize a source of power within myself that comes from the knowledge that while it is most desirable not to be afraid, learning to put fear into a perspective gave me great strength. My silences have not protected me. Your silence will not protect you. Yeah. What are the words that we are yearning to shout out? What do we need to say out loud? What are the tyrannies that we swallow day by day, she asked. Each of us here now, because in one way or another, we share a commitment to language as power, to reclaiming language that has been made to work against us. Language is the transformation of silence into action, and we are here today to transform our hearts, to transform our communities, to transform this nation and the world with our actions. Yes. Scrutinize the truth of what we speak. Share and spread the words that are meaningful to us. Teach by living and speaking these truths. Water, agua. Shelter, techo. Accessibility, accesibilidad, justice, justicia, freedom, libertad, equality, igualdad, peace, paz, compasión, compassion, resistance, resistencia, and above all, love, amor. They say this is the richest country in the world, and yet we see a country in ruins. They say there is a constitution which protects people, and yet we see how the rich trample on its spirit and chisel away at its bones. They say here you can achieve the American dream, and yet we are living a nightmare. In this country and in this day, people are dying of hunger. People have been forced to make the hard, cold pavement their homes for years. People at the border are being greeted with tear gas, machine guns, cages for children, and infants who are separated from their parents, where they are abused and where they are dying. Today, the people, the afflicted, the hungry, the imprisoned, echo the prophets throughout the ages in every religion, and the people with and without religious affiliations or beliefs shout out a call demanding justice, righteousness, and the dignity of all in the form of clean, accessible water, health care, peace and freedom from militarism, and an end to mass incarceration of people of color. 50 years later, we are in worse shape, including ecological devastation. 50 years later, this nation is more divided than ever. We who live on the margins, we LGBTQ2 queer youth, we unemployed and underpaid veterans, immigrants, indigenous people, people of color are living a nightmare that is immoral. And yet we do have good news. You are the good news, right? We are the good news. The people are speaking up, and we say, yes, we will rebuild this nation. Yes, we will rise up, and our light will shine for all. We shall rise up from the ruins. We are saying enough. Basta. We who believe in freedom will not rest. We who believe in freedom will not rest until it comes, and it won't come until we make it so, because we are the ones we are waiting for.
I love that. I love hearing and I love sharing, and we who believe in freedom will not rest, because I was just teaching this morning, we got to rest. So I want us to hold both of these things together. We can't rest, but if we don't rest, we can't do this work. So we'll find that path together and keep each other rested and healthy and nutritiously fed and slept and all the things that we're going to need to do for this long haul. I was invited to share with you about this report that came out about 6 months ago from the United Nations Special Rapporteur on the basic human right of adequate housing. And I'm curious who knows about this report already. great. So we all need to know about this report. And I also want to especially recognize some of the people in this room who were part of making this report happen. The special rapporteur from the United Nations did not let the city of Oakland officials know that she was coming, that she and her delegation were coming, because we know what would have happened if they had known. And so instead she connected with homeless advocates, homeless people, people in the encampments to find out what was really going on. And her visit was in January 2017. Her name is Leilani Farah. She met with unhoused people, people living in encampments, with housing advocates, and people impacted by the housing crisis in the Bay Area. This was part of a global investigation that included visits to developing countries in the global south, as well as some of the world's wealthiest countries. This work by the United Nations is rooted in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and in the conviction that the right to adequate housing is a fundamental human right to which all people are entitled and to which all governments and societies are accountable. Adequate housing is housing with dignity, with stability, housing with access to sanitation, running water, electricity, and safety. So during her visit, the special rapporteur found that conditions for unhoused people in Oakland are systematically cruel, and that many poorer countries with fewer resources treat unhoused people with far greater compassion and dignity.
Shame.
In October 2018, the United Nations released her findings in a summary report, and referring to the encampments and other temporary housing as informal settlements, the report finds, quote, "The scope and severity of the living conditions in informal settlements make this one of the most pervasive violations of human rights globally. The world has come to accept the unacceptable. It is a human rights imperative that informal settlements be upgraded to meet basic standards of human dignity." I'm gonna talk a little faster to keep in my time. The report says that, quote, "In affluent countries, the law not only prevents the construction of rudimentary shelter by those who are homeless, it criminalizes them, sometimes even for eating and sleeping." And writing specifically about Oakland, the United Nations report says, quote, "Attempting to discourage residents from remaining in informal settlements or encampments by denying access to water, sanitation, and health services and other basic necessities, as has been witnessed by the special rapporteur in San Francisco and Oakland, California, United States of America, constitutes cruel and inhuman treatment and is a violation of multiple human rights, including the rights to life, housing, health, and water and sanitation. Such punitive policies must be prohibited in law and immediately ceased." So the great Jewish teacher Maimonides lived in Spain in the 12th century, and his compilation of law, the Mishnah Torah, is still studied to this day. And that code teaches, I'm changing a little bit the language to make it more gender inclusive, but the code says, "We're commanded to give a poor person what he or she needs. If she lacks clothes, we should clothe her. If he lacks household utensils, we should purchase them for him. If they are unmarried, we should help them marry. With regard to an orphan for whom people are seeking to find a wife for him to marry, first we rent for him a house. We provide for him a bed and all his household necessities, and then we seek to find a wife for him to marry. When a poor person comes and asks for his needs to be met and the giver does not have financial capacity, she should give to him according to her financial capacity. And lastly, everybody is obligated to give. Not just people who have, even the poorest person who relies on everybody else for their sustenance is required to give, because the giving is not just about the humanity of the person that's receiving, the giving is really about the humanity of the person who's giving.
Hello, my name is Nell Myhand, and I currently live at 1127 Wellington Street in the community of Oakland, California. I'm a black lesbian woman in my early 60s, and I'm here to give my statement about the struggle about housing. I'm grateful to be housed in Oakland, in a place that's affordable at this time when Oakland is the sixth most expensive city to live in the country. I met my landlady in the 1990s when she was teaching at New College of California and I was working at a nonprofit. We did social justice-based trainings and workshops with youth and adults who work with young people. And when her husband died in 2015, she invited me to move into her home. I was so grateful to find affordable housing. I had lived in 6 different places between 2013 and 2015 after being evicted from the home I had lived in since 2000. In October of 2000, my partner and I at the time bought a home near Highland Hospital with the help of several people in our community. She was teaching high school chemistry in San Francisco, and I was working at the nonprofit. In 2004, my mother became unable to live on her own in Ohio, and I was really glad to be able to offer her shelter at my home and take care of her. She was suffering from dementia, so she required 24-hour care. I applied for in-home support services, and it took 2 years, but after a 2-year fight with them, an administrative law judge ruled in our favor, and I became a full-time caregiver. In 2005, my partner had a stroke and shortly thereafter had a heart attack. She was unable to return to teaching, and I became her caregiver as well. Between the three of us, we had enough income to maintain the house and our lives. Sadly, in 2009, my mother passed away. That meant that our income fell by 2/3. So we applied for a loan modification to adjust our mortgage so we could stay in our home. But Chase Bank, thank you, repeatedly lost the paperwork and refused to modify the loan. After a 3-year battle, they foreclosed on our home. But with the help of Casa Justa Just Cause, Global Women's Strike, Women of Color in the Global Women's Strike, Occupy Oakland, and my community, we organized protests outside the bank and prevented the sale of the house at the courthouse twice, and we stayed in the house for 3 years. I went to Washington, D.C. as part of the Right to City Coalition protest of Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae for their collusion with the banks to foreclose on the homes of tens of thousands of people across the country. And I was singing when I got arrested there, Freddie Mac, Freddie, oh, Freddie Mac, we need our houses back. So I've basically been living at the house that I'm at now since 2015, but I don't have a lease there, so I feel like I'm still vulnerable to becoming homeless because my landlady is 81 years old, and I'm concerned that if something happens to her, what will happen to me? So I'm glad to be joining the Poor People's Campaign because I feel like we have the power of the numbers, that we can stand together and be a mighty force calling on. So I'm joining the call on the legislature and the governor to address our human right to be and to live in secure and decent housing, because I'm a human being living in the richest country in the world. We all deserve secure and decent housing. And in this past time for resources to be distributed equally, equitably, so that no one has to live on the street, in a vehicle, or in a shelter. And I support the call for a moral budget that places human needs and care for the planet above the greed of corporations who place profits before people. The more we get together, the stronger we are.
Hello. Hello. I'm Kerry Whiteside. I consider it a privilege to be able to speak on behalf of seniors like myself. Thank you. I consider it a privilege to be able to speak on behalf of seniors like myself that are suffering in poverty. In an area where $100,000 a year is considered low income, my income of $951 a month makes me wonder how I make it. If it wasn't for subsidized housing, I believe I would be living on the streets again. I was saddened when I looked outside my window at the homeless encampment. It was storming, and their tents were being blown away. People were chasing them, desperately trying to put them back together. It took me back to when I was homeless. I was staying in an Oakland shelter that put us out at 5 a.m. It was also stormy. I remember the shelter staff laughing at us and making jokes. I walked to the hospital hoping to get out of the rain, but the security guard ran me out of the lobby. The same happened at Burger King. My jacket was soaked all the way through. I was cold all day. There were many days like that. I felt hopeless, and my self-esteem was very low. I spent these days upset, confused, and I felt so alone. Even house, my life is still a challenge. My cash goes to utilities, medical, co-pays, and medication that are not covered. It also goes to washing my clothes, cleaning supplies, and transportation. When I run out of bus fare, I have to rely on the generosity of the driver, bus driver, who let me on for free sometimes.
Thank you.
I ran out of food around the 14th of every month. I then go to St. Mary's Center for hot food and free groceries. My eyeglasses cost $200, and a bill like that can really affect me for several months. I have to buy glasses every couple of years, but I lost them once. It sent me back again. Even a $25 unexpected bill like a lost door key would throw me whole off budget. I'm grateful that I live inside now. I feel safe, healthy, and I have peace of mind. My SSI check is lower than it's supposed to be. That's why I'm fighting and aiming to increase the SSI grant. It is important to me and to the 2.1 million seniors across California. $100 more a month would be tremendous help. I would like to thank you for inviting me to speak. I hope you take my words to heart.
My name is Michelle Snyder. I'm with Laney College, a Laney College student. I'm with the Laney Tower. I'm one of the editors there. thank you. I appreciate everybody who's into journalism these days because it's under attack, and so are our schools at all levels, I do believe. Especially since I've been at Laney for the past, this is my third semester. I have seen the college deteriorate. The elevators don't work. People who are disabled can't get to certain areas. Recently, a fire has closed the student center and a whole entire building, so they're removing classes. And in the most recent Laney Tower, we have an article regarding that in the mishandling and mismanagement of the finances in Peralta District. I left a stack of Laney Towers back there. There was also an article I wrote here about the student homelessness in the state of California, but also specifically for the Peralta students. And I'm going to just read this first two paragraphs for you. In a time when wealthy parents can spend huge sums to get their unqualified children into universities, community college students are struggling for the basic means to survive. 30% of Peralta students experience homelessness, according to the spring 2017 Peralta Community College District Report on Students' Food and Housing Survey, authored by Vanessa Mercado. Mm-hmm. So that's just the first two paragraphs, and we didn't even know about this survey for this whole entire time has been out. There's been more recent surveys, and KQED has been following up on this, that there's about 50% community college students statewide are experiencing housing insecurities and homelessness, as well as food insecurities. And I'm just going to tell you, I thank you for saying young, but I just started at 40 years old. My twin daughters are 19.
Yes, yes, yes.
I struggled to go to college, yes. And I always assumed that I needed to go to a four-year to get anywhere, but let me tell you, community college is actually getting us jobs. And this is the trade education that we need to educate our communities, to get the people that are in this community into tech jobs rather than flying them in from other states and other countries or wherever they're coming from, already educated. People that already have money are coming in, and that is part of our gentrification issue right there.
Yes.
We need to be focused on educating the people right here in our community, and community college is the key. But as we are witnessing with the things that we are reporting, it's almost as if they don't want us to succeed. It's almost as if they are defunding us and stripping the basic needs, and so that we will be shut down. We're already in an issue where we may be losing our accreditation. We are in dire straits in our community colleges, and I really believe that we need to put focus, not just in community colleges, but also public schools as well, which are under attack with funding, and charter schools. That's a whole other story. These are a lot of issues, and through education, I do believe that we can uplift our communities out of poverty. Thank you very much.
I'm standing in for one of the youth from Youth Spirit Artworks. Youth Spirit Artworks is an art job training program in Berkeley, but servicing the Bay Area. It's committed to empowering and bettering the lives of homeless, low-income San Francisco Bay Area youth. YSA's mission is to use art jobs and job training to empower and transform the lives of youth. Right now, in fact, this very day, there is what's called a build, Youth Spirit Artworks is building tiny houses to house homeless youth in the Bay Area. I had the privilege of going over and walking through their build today. This Tiny House Village project was initiated by the young people in the program in response to the crisis in affordable and accessible housing. There are 1,700 homeless young people in Alameda County, and 36 youth designated beds in shelters. Young people facing housing instability have overwhelmingly experienced abuse, neglect, mental and physical obstacles, and lack access to public resources. The first phase of the 14 Tiny House Village Project will increase the number of youth designated beds in the county by almost 40%. All right, so I asked them what I could present today as an ask of you. So the rest of this month, April 6th, 7th, 13th, 14th, 27th, 28th, August 17th, 18th, 24th, 25th, and September 7th and 8th will be build days. We will have 30 plus people each day working on building these tiny homes. Their ask is for donations of food or money to buy food for the builders. Such things as bagels, muffins, peanut butter and jelly, cold cuts, cheese, trail bars, trail mix, bottled water, tea, coffee, fruit, chips, cookies, drinks, juice, water. You may sign up back there at the table to the left of the exit door. Thank you very much, and the youth who are homeless in our county, thank you.
We shall not be moved. We shall not be moved. Just like a tree that's standing by the water, we shall not be moved.
We're finished.
We are singing. We shall not be moved. We shall not be moved, just like a tree that's planted by the water.